This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. Go to braintreepayments.com/whatthetech for more information. What the Tech? Hey, buddy, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only, Mr. Paul Thrud. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Somebody at our meetup made me say pretty good.
Pretty good. You're always pretty good. Life's okay. It's all right.
Someday I'm going to be excellent.
I can't wait for
that. And that's going to be a day to fear.
What day would that be?
I don't know. I can't see it coming, but it could happen.
When you hit the lotto?
Yeah, that'll be well. Okay. I can tell you what I won't be doing that day is recording a podcast.
Screw you!
I just won
Andrew.
The lottery. See you later.
Sayonara, sucker. Mm-hmm. I just saw you. I feel like I've seen you every single day.
I know.
It's like we're best friends. We're growing up in the same neighborhood.
We would be if I lived in New York.
I know.
You'd probably be tired of me by now.
Paul was in New York. I was
like
in New York.
Rehab program or something.
Yeah, we'd be drinking. Well, that's how much I drink normally, actually. So what does that say? I took the day off from drinking yesterday. Not that I was really hungover. For people who don't know, Paul was in New York. There was a Twit meetup, a Windows Weekly meetup, a What the Tech meetup. A lot of people came by. It was actually great to see so many people just stop in and hang out. A lot of people were impressed on that I lived the gimmick. And I actually drink rosé. They thought it was a big joke. It's not.
No, right. You can't seriously drink this.
That's exactly what it's like. It was actually amazing to see how many people showed up and how nice everybody was.
Yeah.
You know, I was waiting for a guy to be like, hey, you are a jerk and I can't stand you. You're an idiot. But I didn't get any of that.
Oh, I thought you meant for me.
No, for me.
Yes. No, it was great.
You arm wrestled someone?
Yep.
Yep. So that, I took a bunch of pictures with people and it was a whole thing. So, it was a lot of fun. We should plan those more often.
Well, okay. I mean, yes and no. Right. So, I mean, they're very tiring, you know, I mean, I'm happy to do it. I mean, I came to New York just to do this. I had no reason to be there. I paid for it out of my own pocket. No, it's not like anyone was sending me there. Don't mind doing it. I mean, I'm happy to see people. I like, you know, and all that stuff. I don't know about you, but I found myself over time like coughing and it was really dry and I from talking so much and, you know,
it's
a little bit stressful. Like you feel like you have to kind of be on a little bit. And of course, that day was the Apple event, right?
Yeah.
So we remember, you know, we had your... you had your laptop open so we could watch the event. We had the captioning on because we couldn't hear
I think the
outside.
Apple event was more tiring than the actual event. I think just like following that. At one point we gave up and we just shut the laptop. We're like, okay, we can't do
this
anymore.
Yeah, it was like, okay, enough of this.
It was way too long.
Yep.
It was the first time in about 6 years that I did not cover the Apple event.
Right.
So
right.
That was a little weird for me because I was getting tweets. And normally when I'm doing it, I'm like in, you know, DEF CON 1 and I'm doing the show and I'm tweeting back and I'm looking at your tweets and I'm just... reading what you're saying.
It's not different. I was just doing the same thing I always do.
Yeah, and I actually got to witness your live tweeting. It was like a Broadway show. It was, you would come up with a joke,
singing
you would
and
laugh,
dancing.
And then you would like run it by us. It was like a writer's meeting. You're like, what do you think of this one? And I was like, I think that's a good one. And then you would just put it out. It was awesome to see. if anybody, you know what? Forget about going to a Broadway play. Next time Paul's in New York, come to the Rattle and Hum, and God, hope that there's a big event, because Paul was on... This was his moment.
Yeah.
And it was great.
I live for these events.
Yeah. Everything was great. Everything was wonderful. I had a lot of fun with the meetup. We're going to talk about it in the post show, the bonus show. But I want to talk about the Apple event a little bit today. Because, you know, when you're watching the event and when you're doing the event, cover an event, you really can't, you're just going based on instant reaction, which is interesting. And then like 2 days go by and... your perspective on things are a little bit different. Yep. Yep. I also discovered a glitch on the Mac OS that drove me nuts for about 3 weeks. and I ended up fixing it, and it was the most simplest and dumbest way to fix this problem. I want to talk about that also, but before we do that, Paul, we're going to take a little tiny break and talk about our sponsor, and that's Braintree. Listen, guys, if you are a web developer, an app developer, if you are a company that is getting ready to launch a mobile app to accept payments, look into this. It's braintreepayments.com/whatthetech. What is it? It's a mobile payment service mobile app developers could use, and they could implement this into your website, and it makes accepting online payments super easy. Websites like Uber, Airbnb, Hotel Tonight, Living Social, the list goes on and on. All these companies are using this service. Why? Because it's very easy, and it makes it easy for your customers, and they have unbelievable fraud protection. Not fraud protection, as I've said a couple times in the past, fraud protection. Great customer service and fast payouts also. The way that it works, it's token-based, so the credit card information is secure. You don't have to worry about it getting stolen. You don't have to worry about any of that. Also, they're giving the first $50,000 in transactions are fee-free. If you go to braintreepayments.com/whatthetech, one of my buddies, he's an app developer, Josh, just implemented this. He said it literally took him 10 minutes to put this in. It's a couple lines of code. I believe it's 10 lines of code, and you are ready. You are off and running. You could accept everything from PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, all major credit cards, all different types of currency. This is actually amazing to see. By the way, they're also a PayPal company, so you know it's a name that you could trust. This is a great way to implement payments. This is a great way to implement just this great piece of software, a great couple lines of code into your app to accept payments. Braintreepayments.com/whatthetech. Your first $50,000 in transactions are fee-free. One of my buddies, he has a very successful clothing brand here in New York, and he's actually putting Braintree. He's implementing Braintree to accept payments on his website. So I'm hoping to get an update from him once he does this. It was a couple months ago he contacted me telling me he was going to do it. So I'm curious to see how well it works for him. Maybe I could get him to do like a little video for us. Braintreepayments.com/whatthetech. I want to thank them for supporting What the Tech and, of course, for supporting the GFQ Network. Paul, where do we begin?
Where
do you want to start with this Apple event?
Actually, I have a good an idea about how to start on this one. Think briefly. We've not prearranged this.
Yeah, we have not.
Think briefly about all the stuff that Apple announced on Wednesday, right? iPad Pro, iPhone 6S and 6S Plus, some Apple Watch stuff.
Apple TV.
Right? Apple TV, iOS 9, iPad Mini 4, you know, very briefly.
Yeah.
And that's most of it, right? Those are the big things. Okay. Now, we knew about almost everything that they announced in advance. Given that, given what they announced, which of those things, and this goes to what you just said, you know, a couple of days on, you have a little bit more perspective. Which one of those things is actually going to change your life the most? And which are you most looking forward to? Like, which would you actually go out and get, like, day one that you have, like, that is, in fact, a big deal, not just in general, but for you personally?
For me personally, it would be the Apple TV.
Bingo. Exactly right. And that is true for me as well, which is the point. That's really interesting when you think about it, because new iPhones are always a big deal.
And new iPads.
The iPad Pro is huge, huge news. And yet, Apple TV.
At $149 to $199.
Apple TV is the, and it's not even there yet, right? Because a big component of this, you know, we think the future of TV is apps, you know. The past of TV is apps, by the way. Xbox 360 had TV apps. Roku has TV apps. You know, Amazon does. Everyone does. The big thing about Apple TV, I think, one of the big things, their Apple Music for Apple TV is going to be that subscription service that's not ready yet, right? So that's, but even without that, I actually think Apple TV is the big deal.
I think Apple TV is a big deal because it's something that people are going to go and buy, and it's a thoughtless purchase.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about, I mean, it really is, because for $149, you're walking in there, there's no commitment. That's the only thing that you really don't have a commitment with.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I don't know that, you know, Apple TV, this thing that Apple had until fairly recently described as a hobby, this market that no one has cracked. Steve Jobs infamously said, through his biography, you know, we've, he can't talk about it yet at the
we've
time.
Cracked
we've
it.
Nailed, We've nailed it. What do you say?
We've cracked the TV. We've cracked the living room. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that, right? By the way, 4 years later, still hasn't happened.
But was this it? Was this what he was alluding to?
Okay, so I think it's a combination of things that he was alluding to. Remember, 2011, right? So we're talking iPhone 4S or 5 was coming out that year.
2011 was 4S.
4S. Yeah. So Siri, first version of Siri. So here's what I'm guessing. I think what Steve Jobs was alluding to was a combination of things like Apple TV with iOS, meaning the whole ecosystem with apps.
Yeah.
With Siri for voice control. With the subscription service that would let you pick things a la carte and not be beholden to the cable companies. I think what he was referring to is roughly what we will see within the next year on Apple TV. That this, although, and by the way, to be clear, obviously things have changed. He might have literally thought that it would require them to make a TV. You know, maybe at that time they were going to make their own TV. But I actually think this is the right approach. You know, you plug something in. You know, this is a significant advance for what they had. It's, you know, compared to what else is in the market right now, it's not necessarily a significant advance. But if they can pull off the subscription service thing, I think they could have something that other people really can't get. I think they really do have that kind of pull.
Yeah,
I think that's what he meant.
Yeah, I don't. You know, when he initially said that, and everyone's like, "Oh, he's talking about a TV," and I don't think he was ever talking about a TV.
Okay,
I think what it doesn't matter. In my opinion, I think
things have changed.
Right? Yeah, things have. I mean, tremendously since 2011. But when he said that, and all these rumors came out about a TV, and then Apple actually, I think Apple started looking into creating a TV because of all the buzz around it, and they realized like this is useless. There's no point in us doing this. The thing that's going to be interesting about Apple TV is the apps, and we really don't know how they're going to accept people. We know that they've opened up development to app developers right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have about a month and a half till they release this thing. So a lot of people are going to be scrambling to do this. And I expect for a while, it's only going to be big names. You're not going to see like the GFQs on an Apple TV for a while. I think they're going to be really strict.
It's going to be more of a curated.
Yeah, they're going to be a little stricter than a phone because you don't want people going on there and seeing all this crap. They want to separate themselves from everybody else. And, I mean, this is the best way to do it. The gaming is another interesting aspect of this device. Do you think that the games are going to be a huge selling point for them?
This is a tough one because we discussed this. I can't remember if it was on air last week or at the event this week, whatever it was. But no one has ever really made that work. You know, Roku was early on this. You know, you could get Angry Birds and some other games. And if you look at a Roku controller, turn it sideways, it looks like a Nintendo controller. I mean, by design. Amazon obviously has done this. Google has done this, right? And none of these things have been successful. So... yeah, it's possible. I mean, Apple rather talks up the console quality graphics of their systems a lot. But when you tie, no one to my knowledge, I know these things exist, but no one in any volume is attaching a Xbox style controller to an iOS device and playing, you know, Xbox quality games right now. I mean, I know technically this stuff sort of exists.
Yeah.
And so, you know, will Apple TV finally make that possible in the living room?
I really enjoyed how they kept saying it's console style graphics.
Yeah.
Which console? Yeah. When?
Right.
What kind of console?
Wii? Yeah. What are we talking about?
Yeah. What console are we talking about? I mean, they do have a chance. I'm surprised they did not announce a third party controller. That was the thing that I was actually.
Like you mean their own controller?
Yeah, their own controller, like a separate, separate controller or controller partners, third party partners.
Yeah. Right.
If they don't want to make it.
Yeah.
You know, you could team up with Mad Cats or whatever the companies are that make these controllers for a third party controller for the games, because I don't want a game with my with this thing.
Right. No one does.
So that was a little bit of a surprise. Probably next generation they'll do that, or they'll announce it later down the road where people are going to start developing all these because it does Bluetooth.
It's not possible to look at anything Apple announced on Wednesday and not imagine the next version, right? Like, you know, iPad Pro is limited in some very serious ways. The keyboard cover looks ridiculous in very important ways. It's not hard to imagine them fixing that stuff next year. You know, for Apple TV, I think the big change is coming, what you're talking about, like a formalization. And the way they'll say it is, you know, we noticed over the past year that, you know, third parties were very successful releasing these controllers and everything, and people really like interacting with games that way. So we thought we would either make our own or open this up. So like, here's a formal, and by the way, this stuff could already be in the SDK for all I know. You know, here's the buttons we support, you know, here's how that would work, you know, that kind of thing. So I guess we'll see. But obviously Apple TV is a work in progress. I think this new generation, you know, it's going to have this 1 year in the market where a lot of people just kind of use it the way we use Apple TV already. And we'll kind of see how it goes.
Yeah, it's I'm shocked that it took them this long to do this. And the only thing pointing to why is that they tried to do that deal with all the networks and it failed. Right. They couldn't do it. They couldn't strong arm them because it's not, you know, the carriers. It's not what it used to be.
Right.
So they just gave up and said, okay, we're just going to release whatever we were going to do prior to this. Because, I mean, the rumors were what? A subscription service for $20 a month. You're getting all these channels. It was a cord-cutting device.
Well, they, you know, remember, they were going to announce this at the last several Apple events. This has been an ongoing rumor. This summer, it really heated up ahead of WWDC. And what made it fall apart was this agreement with all of the networks, you know, for the subscription service. And so they still don't have that. They went ahead anyway. And I think they'll just keep working on that. And I suppose at this point what they can point to is, hey, look, you know, this thing's doing really well. Let's, you know, and we have these other partners on board. Let's go. You know,
yeah.
And that will improve over time.
You're ordering one, obviously, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But you know, when you look at the stuff that they announced, I mean, obviously I have existing Apple devices. And so you can upgrade to iOS 9, you know. I don't have any iPad that can do like a split screen multitasking thing. And I think that's going to be kind of important for me. I have no use for or desire to own an iPad Pro. It's a lot of money to spend.
Yeah. So
for something
let's go to that. The iPad Pro. Yeah, who's this targeting?
Well, by the way, it's sort of targeting the same market that the iPad is targeting. Remember before iPad and before these kind of consumer oriented tablets that have kind of come in the wake of iPad, most people used a computer to do the stuff that they do on an iPad now. And a computer is not well suited to these kind of things. And so when you strip away games like casual games, Facebook, email, web, yada, yada, yada from a PC, I mean, what's left?
Yeah.
You know, like what's the final frontier there? And obviously it's productivity tasks. You can do light stuff, you know, and I've seen people, you know, they type on the glass and they get, you know, they get stuff done. I mean, people can do this, but there is a big divide, I think, between the iPad, which is primarily a consumer consumption type device, and a PC, which is essentially a productivity device.
Yeah.
And I think this is the final frontier for this, and I think it's inevitable, and I think this is the beginning of the end for the Mac. And people will push back against that and, oh, but Paul, and, you know, I get it, you know, and it doesn't happen overnight. I think the Mac becomes essentially a workstation, something for just for power users. But the market for this kind of device is actually really huge. It's much bigger than the market for a traditional PC.
Oh, tremendous.
Because, yeah, most people's needs, like content creation needs, are very small, you know, even if you're a student of any kind, college student, high school student, younger kid, whatever, you know, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, or some other thing that does those things, right? Apple's products, Google's products, whatever they are. You know, you need to generate text. You need to take notes. You need to write a report and maybe print it out or maybe hand it in electronically now if the world has moved on to that. This can satisfy those needs for most people, you know? I mean, I look at the Office mobile apps on Windows tablets. I look at it on iPads today, and I think this is really, you know, this is kind of all that people need. So I think there is a market for this. They've gotten some things wrong. I'm not entirely sure about the size of it.
You think
like
it's too big or?
I need to see one in person. I mean, it's 12. Funny.
12.8. It's not small by any means.
No. I mean, I know it's thin and light and all that kind of stuff. You still got to stick it in the bag and you still have to protect it in some way. I think that keyboard cover, the smart keyboard, reminds me a little bit of that first sleeve. For the first iPad, it was kind of ungainly looking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ugly, and it kind of made this beautiful thing look ugly, and it's all contorting, you know, folding baloney. I think they're going to do a better job on that kind of thing later, like V2. Keyboard backlighting, you know, maybe even a pointer. You know,
we'll it's interesting because it's not an Apple keyboard, and that's what we were. I think we were discussing this the last time you came to New York. We were talking about what is it going to look like, and I had really expected the keyboard to kind of be the standout part of this.
It was actually kind of the lamest part.
It was the lamest part. I really thought through the magnetics. You know, it would be, you know, like a MacBook almost. It would be like a Mac keyboard, and it wasn't. It was very similar to the Surface keyboard, which you, myself, and many other people have complained, why don't we have a pro level Surface keyboard? It's fine, but would you be happy if that was your everyday computer?
Well, by the way, I need to use it. They talked about the keys being designed like the ones on the new MacBook, and actually that's not a big selling point. Universally, people don't really like that keyboard. It feels weird. It's not a standard kind of keyboard throw because it's really low profile. The keyboard on the Surface Pro 3 or the Surface 3 is actually pretty nice. It's just a little too, I'm huge. So, I mean, I'm not a fair comparison, but it's a little too small for me. I wish it was a little wider. They did an on-screen shot of the iPad Pro kind of in landscape mode, and the virtual keyboard that was on it. It looked a lot like Apple's hardware keyboard, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I briefly thought to myself, you know, given the size of this thing, there's no reason why the keyboard on a MacBook Air couldn't be there.
Yeah.
You know, and instead what you get is this truncated thing. It doesn't even have a wrist rest. Obviously, there's no trackpad or any pointing device. It's $170, which is really steep. So we'll see.
It's pricey. It's not cheap.
It's an Apple product. I mean, you know, we get that. But, you know, if you're going to spend, I guess here's the value proposition, I guess. You could say, okay, so a mid-level iPad Pro with, 64, 120 gigs of storage, whatever. So maybe it's like $800, $900, not 200 almost for the keyboard. So we're talking 1,000, 1,100. Pen, because there's no pointing, you know, element. And the pen looks pretty good, by the way. I mean,
the pen does look really good.
The pencil, you know, except for the fact that it doesn't actually do handwriting or handwriting recognition, so you can't take notes with it in handwriting. And that's an area that Microsoft isn't just ahead of Apple. They're literally 15 years ahead of Apple. I mean, this is something Microsoft has been doing forever. It's also not clear if there's any palm detection, like palm blocking, so that when your hand is on the glass, it doesn't register both touches. In fact, I actually don't think they have that because they explicitly mentioned that you could use the pen and touch the screen at the same time, which arguably is not what anyone would ever want. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
This stuff all adds up, and it adds up to like $1,200, $1,300. And for that much money, you could buy a MacBook Air, like a really nice one, like a 13-inch MacBook Air with decent storage and RAM. And so I guess the argument becomes, why wouldn't you just get the MacBook Air?
Why wouldn't you?
But the answer is because you're also getting an iPad, right?
Slow transition to making the iPad, you know, having some sort of hybrid?
Well, yes, but so remember, this goes. We've been talking about this for a long time. I mean, you know, you can bring a Windows PC down market. You make it simpler. You make the devices tablet-y. And you're starting from a place of great complexity, and you kind of move it down market. Or you could do Apple's approach, where you start with something that's great simplicity, and you bring it up market over time. And there are arguments to be made by both sides. I think ultimately Apple's approach wins out because it doesn't have the legacy cruft that you kind of get with Windows. It's much harder to take away than it is to add, you know. The problem is this is V1. So in its current form, I don't think it's quite there yet. I don't have one. So, I mean, I'm making a very ill-informed opinion here. I mean, I'm just basing it on what I saw. I guess I'll have to get one. I'll at least go see one. I don't know. But I do think that their approach is going to win out. I mean,
Apple's.
We need to remember
the approach Microsoft, of what? Splitting it? Splitting it and having two separate types of devices, or their approach of...
Well, no. So here's the weirdism of it. Like today, if I were going on a trip, which I did this week, right?
Yeah.
I stick a laptop in my bag. In my case, it's an HP Spectre X360, which actually is a transforming PC with touch and blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't really matter because I'm using it like a laptop. But I also bring like a little tablet-y kind of device, which in my case today is an iPad mini, which I read on, or maybe a Kindle, which I read on. The nice thing about Windows 10 is that, and this type of device that I have that's a laptop that's really a transforming two-in-one kind of thing, is that I could rent movies on it. I could download my own movies that I already own, put them on there, and I can watch movies on it. It gets good battery life. The screen's big and all that kind of stuff, so it kind of works. But I typically, and I think a lot of people still, would have like computer for work, tablet for play kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or a phone, or a big phone. They could use a big phone too, a tablet. So I guess the curious thing about this is I'm not sure. For this to be truly successful, it has to be able to do both really well. It has to be a really good iPad.
I mean, but do you see them doing, you know, the iPad Pro, when you dock it, it'll become the Mac, and when you, you know, like...
I don't think it becomes the Mac. I don't think they need the Mac. That's
you don't
the
think
point.
They need it?
No, in fact, you know, remember, one of the things they showed off was a very complex-looking kind of CAD CAM software.
I saw that, yeah.
And that was clearly designed to say, look, you know, this can do things that are kind of Mac-like. I mean, obviously...
And it's not even an Intel chip, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, so for example, like, we'll have to see where the software goes, right? Today, if you have an iPad, you can buy this kind of Photoshop, or actually it's probably free, like a Photoshop Express kind of product. It bears zero resemblance to Photoshop. Zero. It has nothing to do with Photoshop other than that Adobe sells it. Like, I don't think there's anything from Photoshop in it. It just doesn't seem like the same product. But now you get this thing, and it's got a pen, and it's supported in the system. It's not like a bogus, you know, capacitive pen that somebody just added to the system. It makes no sense for that kind of thing. Like, you know, you could get it on an iPad today. You get a big screen, potentially of a keyboard. Much powerful processor, much more, you know, faster storage, etc. Adobe could look at this and say, well, maybe now it's time to make our own little hybrid version of Photoshop where it kind of makes sense on this device.
On this device, because it's powerful enough to be able to kind of...
Microsoft is doing that with Office. So it's still the mobile version of Office, but they're kind of going a little upmarket with it on the iPad Pro. You get the ability to do, you know, pen stuff. It's not, again, it's not like handwriting, but it's, you know, you can interact with the pen. So, you know, the next year is going to be very telling because the way that developers support it will kind of determine how fast we move down this future. But I've been saying this for a long time. I think it's inevitable on Apple's side. Like, iOS is going to be the platform. It's not Mac.
Yeah. It was interesting because they really, at this event, the thing that I took away from it was that they were constantly reminding us that the performance of these devices that they're talking about is console-style graphics, is CPU laptop performance, laptop graphics, you know. And I'm looking at their PR thing here. And it goes, at the heart of the iPad Pro lies the new A9X, our third generation chip with 64-bit desktop class architecture, delivers 1.8 times the CPU performance and double the graphics performance of an iPad Air, iPad Air 2. So they're reminding us that, listen, you could do a lot more. It's not just a tablet. This is a computer. This is a PC.
I mean, they talk about this all the time. You could probably find language like that in their iPod Touch announcement. You know?
Yeah, I guess so.
Because I use a lot of these devices, like, for example, the HP Spectre X360 has a 13-inch screen, right? You can fold it over into a big, bulky, kind of awkward tablet. I don't sit on my couch and play video games on it like that. I mean, I know the iPad Pro is a lot thinner and lighter. I get it. So maybe it's better. But, I need to experience it. I'm afraid I don't want to go off some deep end and you know, kind of dump all over it and then realize later on, actually, this thing works okay. Like, I'm not, I really am not sure.
Yeah.
I just feel like this thing has got V1 written all over it. I think things will improve.
So where do you see them? I mean, the next generation, right? We always like to speculate and we always like to say like, okay, well, this is what they're going to do with this, this is where they're going. Where can they go with this? Because they're kind of following the form factor of the iPad, but they have to do something special other than, you know, make it bigger and allow you to kind of snap the screen. I think where they really will benefit is, you know, floating apps. Sounds like something else, right? Kind of reminds you of, yeah, kind of reminds the start. Yeah, I mean, add a start menu, add a taskbar, and have floating apps, and then run, you know, Windows-based executable files.
Yeah, I mean, well, so I don't know how it works, but I mean, I you know, obviously iOS 9 and newer, and depending on the device, you have these interesting capabilities where you can bring up other UIs over the top of something you're doing. And it's the beginning of truly versatile and useful, you know, multitasking capabilities, right? So iPad Pro has the obvious stuff where you can run two apps side by side in various modes, you know, or you can, they have like a thing that is, I guess, apparently just bringing it up over the side of it or whatever. But you know, what's not in there is, well, actually it sort of is in there. There, you just see the starts of this, but you know, if you think about how multitasking works on a Mac, they have a dock, and on Windows, we have a taskbar, right? And so you can kind of have this kind of helper thing that occurs. Like when you do snap in Windows 10, if I snapped a window to the side, it would show me the other open windows over here so I could pick the other thing, you know? And in the demo they did of iPad Pro, which I think is actually running iOS 9.1, for the side UI, like when you dock an app to the side, you actually get something that is basically, it's not the home screen, but it's sort of a list of the apps you have installed that looks a little bit like the home screen.
How do you on the Mac? Do you know how to do that in the...
Snap on the Mac.
Yeah, in El Capitan.
I don't think
it has it. It has support. Yeah, I don't know how to do it because I'm running it right now.
If you drag it to the side of the screen, does it work?
No, of course not.
So I don't know. I have no idea. Are you sure it supports Snap?
Yeah, yeah.
Like window arrangement stuff.
Yeah, it's snapping. I'm sure will tell us.
I don't know, but anyway, on the iPad Pro, they do show you icons like you see on the start screen, the home screen, when you need to put something else on the side. But, you know, you could almost make the argument, well, why not just have those things be in a dock? You know, we know this UI works or doesn't work. I mean, however you feel about it, but we know this UI.
I mean, but they have a dock on the bottom.
I know, but why not make it always on the bottom?
Yeah.
In other words, if you swiped, I always thought it was kind of a missed opportunity on iOS. Like they have, I don't remember when they added this stuff, iOS 7 probably. You know, they added a notification center at one point where you can swipe down from the top. And then the swipe up from the bottom is, it's a kind of a weird overlay control, you know, whatever it is. And I always thought, you know, it'd be interesting if that thing was the dock, you know, like if you swiped up from the bottom, that would be like a really obvious way to access your other running apps. You could kind of, you know, swipe through the list. Of course, I think the problem is too many, you know, many people have hundreds and hundreds of apps on their phone, and maybe that gets a little much. But then I guess I could also say, if you think about the differences between Android and iOS, Android is a little more sophisticated in that they, and Windows Phone does the same thing, where they have this, the concept of all apps, that everything installed on the phone, but the stuff on your home screen is just the stuff you've pinned there that you want to access a lot. And maybe that's a direction iOS needs to head in as
well. The direction of iOS is interesting because I do think that they need to separate themselves on the tablet and on the phone. I think we're at a point where the iPad should not just be an oversized iPhone.
But that's what I mean. This is how they get there. In other words, for right now, what you do is you say, look, you understand the iPad, you understand the iPhone. Here's a bigger version. If you want, you can add a keyboard, you can add a pen, pencil, whatever. Easy. This is how you make the transition. Next year, you start bringing in. Remember, they always talk about this, and this is exactly how they'll do it. Assuming they do what I'm talking about, this is exactly how they'll present it. They'll talk about that virtuous cycle, and they'll talk about how, you know, in the beginning we had macOS 10 features that we put into iOS, and now we're doing iOS features that go into macOS 10. Well, now they can go in the other direction again, because when you talk about a productivity device like an iPad Pro, it needs, or it may need, certain things that are available in macOS 10, including that kind of the ability to arbitrarily choose apps easily, you know, beyond just going home and hunting and pecking on a screen and then going back out. It needs to be more sophisticated than a standard iPad UI, I think.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think where the evolution of this device will be. I mean, I know they're pushing enterprise usage, but I can't imagine a company saying, oh, you need a laptop? Forget it. We're going to get an iPad Pro.
Not yet, but I mean, what if it looked like the Mac?
But it's still limiting you on what you're going to use.
The Mac is limiting you on what you're going to use. Yeah. There are so many more apps on iOS than there are on the Mac. I mean, it's not even comparable. And if those things ran in floating windows on a desktop,
then it's a different story. No, then it's if it had some sort of desktop-like environment.
I don't actually think.
But they, you know what though? You could do floating windows on the Mac. You could hit the button and it does, what is it called? Expose, whatever they call that thing.
Yes.
And it floats all the windows. If you had that on the Mac. I'm sorry. If you had that on the iPad, yeah. That would be floating windows to an extent.
Well, okay. I'm not even necessarily suggesting they need floating windows. I'm just saying these are possibilities for the future that, the Mac sells pretty well, but but iOS sells a lot better and it's a much cleaner code base and it has way more apps, way more users, and it's actually way more comfortable for people,
argument. Is it more comfortable for people?
Yes.
For who? Is it comfortable for you?
For everybody.
User?
No, yeah. In general. I mean, think about it. There's a reason the Mac has never gone out of 7-whatever% user market share. It's because it's still kind of a complex thing that most people don't really need. If people could buy a device that was simple to use and work like an iPad most of the time, but then could turn into a fairly full-function computer by clipping on a keyboard and doing my one work paper or my one school paper and then back to games, actually, I think there is a market for that kind of device. I think that's where they're heading. I really do. The notion of a general purpose computer as we've known it for the past 30 years or whatever is coming to an end because most people don't need it. They just don't need it. And if you could enhance the iPad experience slightly to accommodate this when needed, that kind of thing could be very successful.
I agree with you.
I don't think this is going to do it.
But that's what Microsoft tried to attempt. Windows 8.
They came at it from the wrong direction.
Okay.
Right? Every time every time like a company makes a
every
decision.
Every time, Andrew, you make a decision Andrew, about Windows.
There are a lot of examples of things like this. Like when Microsoft was going to enter the living room in 2001, 2002 with WebTV. eHome and Media Center. The two choices were, do we base it on Windows and put a PC in the living room, or do we base it on Xbox and put an appliance in the living room? And at the time, they went with Windows because that made more sense. There was more expertise there, more power, more versatility, more options, also more complexity, more cost, whatever. And it did that, was that the right decision for the time? I guess we could debate that endlessly. If they were going to do it today, I can assure you they wouldn't be putting a PC in the
room. So with Microsoft, right, if we were to reflect on this, Apple's approach is two separate things, and the simpler thing is becoming more complicated rather than the more complicated thing becoming simpler. Microsoft tried it in the opposite way. If Microsoft had created, their tablet UI, which is, the modern UI, and then slowly phased desktop elements and Windows elements into it, would we be in a very different position right now? Or would the end of the day result be
matter.
The same thing?
It doesn't matter because the way that these things evolve was natural for the time, the place, and circumstances in which they involve. The PC market kind of grew the way it grew. If Microsoft ignored the PC market and made simpler devices so that it could then make great PCs 15 years down the road, it never would have been successful. I mean, the reason Apple went in the direction it went in is that there was a ceiling on the Mac. As successful as that business is, that company was only going to be a certain size if that's all they ever did. If they based everything around the Mac, if they kept doing that, they would have harmed themselves.
Yeah.
So forced to start over, they did. And they started with very simple devices like MP3 players and kind of went from there. So, you know, when they were making the first iPod, do you think Steve Jobs is rubbing his hands together and saying, I got big plans for phones and tablets and watches? And no, no.
This, yeah, it just
happened. It was a moonshot. It was, you know, these things just happen. It's circumstantial. Remember, you know, the big story about the iPod was John Rubinstein went to Japan and Toshiba had just invented the 1.8-inch hard drive, which, by the way, today seems incredibly huge. And
how big was the hard drive?
I think it was 1.8 inches,
yeah.
You know, and not even solid state, right? I mean, who would put a hard drive in anything today? And at the time, though, that was revolutionary. And he kind of called, I think he called back and talked to Steve Jobs. I don't know what we could use this in, but if we buy these things up, no one else can have them. Let's just take them. Maybe this will work on this little side project we've been talking about, turn it into something different. And I bet that the iPod, as we know it today, evolved.
And,
you know,
yeah, from
because
that.
Of that decision, because maybe they would have come out with something that had flash storage in it, and it would have been really small. It would have been a very different, you know. So it's a circumstance. Like I can't pretend that Apple just got everything right and always does everything right, and their direction is always right. I'm just, you know, generally speaking, I've always thought this. I mean, I think the bet that with regards to simplicity to complexity rather than the reverse makes more sense. Microsoft tried to do it with Windows RT. But, you know, they can't help themselves. They have to they don't go new. They go based on Windows. A lot of that was just hubris. Like they had a simpler, you know, again, still based on Windows, but a Windows Phone OS that they should have worked off of. Would that have been more successful? Actually, no. But, I mean, it would have been a better approach.
I mean, I think it was necessary. Microsoft had to make those necessary mistakes to get to where they are now with this, you know, with Windows 10.
We all did. You know, right? I mean, it's true of everybody and everything. I mean... Yeah.
Right now the current version of Windows is exactly what people had expected or wanted.
Well, but like everything else we've been talking about, Windows 10 could never have happened without the disaster that is Windows 8. We never would have arrived here, you know?
So where would we have been? I mean, that's the best part.
Who knows?
I'm curious about that. Like, where would...
The team that made Windows 8 said at the time, we could have just done Windows 7 again.
Yeah,
you know, but if you think about it, you just made Windows 7. So, you know, what are you going to do? Like, what do you like? What gets better? You know, what's the point? I think that Windows 8, as bad as it was notable because it was just an explosion of new. You know, I think desktop operating systems had matured to the point where there wasn't really much you could do that would be exciting to people, and you can see that on the Mac side. I mean, if you look at the last. Four versions of the Mac. We're not talking about Big Bang.
Paul, I'm running the latest version. I'm running El Capitan.
Yeah.
And if I didn't know that this was a different version, I would say this is exactly what the last version was. There's nothing that is different.
And
nothing.
Right. And that's not a dig at Apple.
No, not at all.
It's a mature product. This thing's been around for a long time. Mac OS X is about 15 years old. It's about 25 years old, if you want to include Next in there, and maybe you should. It's mature. It's about 35 years old, if you want to include the Unix, you know, blah, 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 whatever underpinnings are in there. You know, this is stuff that's been maturing for a long time. Windows is the same thing. There's only so much you can do. And so as bad as Windows 8 was, it's kind of cool to me that Windows 10 really benefits from this because... There's some live tile stuff in there. I'm not sold on whether it makes any sense at all on the desktop system. Certainly on touch systems, tablets, and so forth, it does. And, you know, this new app platform, I think, was a big step. And it's still up in the air over whether this will ever be successful. But these safe and reliable and known good apps that you get from a trusted source and all that kind of stuff, it's a good plan. I mean, it hasn't, you know.
Paul, what was the... what was the Mac OS supposed to be if they didn't absorb Next?
Well, I mean, wasn't they had lots of different plans, right?
So remember that wasn't it BOS?
Well, no, I mean, so before any of that happened, they were working on something called Copeland, which was their version of Longhorn, that, you know, the thing that they kept talking about that never happened and was never going to happen. And then they started shopping around for external sources for an operating system. The four big contenders, as I recall, were Windows NT, go figure. Solaris, BOS, and then Next Step, although Next Step actually, OpenStep, I guess, was a late entry And it was basically, I don't remember the exact story, but I want to say it was an engineer from Apple called his buddy at Next and said, hey, by the way, we're shopping around for an OS. You should throw your hat in the ring or whatever, something like that. They weren't really one of the first contenders, but they got in there.
BOS was interesting because I remember, I know that Palm ended up buying them, and they did nothing with them, but it was really pretty for the time.
Yeah, I like BOS a lot. I remember BOS had tabbed windows.
Yeah.
So they weren't perfectly rectangled. It was like a tab, like you'd see in a file folder on the top. And you could, grab that with the mouse and drag. You would drag it around that way. Back in the late 1990s, that was very interesting. That was a tiny company. They didn't have a lot of resources. I think they were Mac hardware only in the beginning, and then they eventually went to the PC.
I don't remember anything about Copeland. Did they ever demo it?
Yeah, well,
like a real demo?
No. No. Copeland was the dream. The thing we forget about classic Mac OS, like Mac OS pre-Mac OS X, which, by the way, I believe is actually called OS X, not Mac OS X. No, I think they dropped the Mac from the name. Is that it was that itself was based on code bases that go back to the 1980s. It had huge memory problems. Remember, you used to be able to go in and say, I want to give this much memory to Photoshop. Like, you could actually kind of specify that, but it was really the memory wasn't protected. If you overwrote the memory another app was using, you could crash the OS and or the app, and you had to reboot the thing all the time. It was really, really unreliable. I mean, by the time Windows 95 and then Windows NT 4.0 came out in the mid to late 90s, Mac OS was horribly unstable, and it was just kind of teetering.
Copeland was, didn't they end up, it was OS 8.
Copeland never happened. I mean, so.
But that was the hope.
I don't remember.
From what I
don't know. There were other bets. Remember, Apple had two strategic alliances. I can only think of one of them off the top of my head, but one was Taligent, which I think was with IBM. Intelligent was going to be like a next-gen object-oriented operating system, as I recall. And there was another one. And, of course, they did the PowerPC thing, which was also, it was Motorola and IBM, I think. But I think Apple was a big partner with PowerPC, RISC versus CISC. Remember that thing? But I can't remember what was the other one? Apple had another partnership to develop a next-gen platform. Was it? Did they do something with Sun? I can't remember what it was.
I don't know. Everything's a blur with that. Their future was really up in the air.
Well, yeah, there's all this stuff that came out of Apple. I mean, Apple was in many ways was almost like AT&T. There was a General Magic. It was ex-Apple guys, and they did mobile OS stuff. Intelligent is a portmanteau of talent and intelligent, an object-oriented operating system. Yep. Joint venture with IBM as part of the AIM Alliance. Actually, this might have even been pre-Copeland, so.
Yeah, it was
pink and blue.
I'm trying to see.
System 6 pink.
Yeah. Who bought a Next computer? I want to know who bought one.
Who bought? No, well, no one. That was the problem.
Yeah. Next computer. I mean, introductory price was $6,500.
Yeah, they were so beautiful, and I loved the UI. At the time, I look at it now and it looks so old fashioned, but at the time, it was amazing. And of course, you see stuff in that UI that continues today in OS X, as you would expect.
Which one was their biggest, the last one? What was it?
The last what?
For Next. What was their last model?
Well, OpenStep. So in other words, they opened up Next Step off of Next hardware, right? So I think it ran on Solaris. It ran on NT and PCs. It ran on, I wonder if it ran on Mac. Probably PowerPC. I'm not sure Mac exactly, but I guess PowerPC.
I mean, the crazy thing is still things that Next did is being implemented in the iPad. With their iOS. Yeah.
Oh, no, Next is all over it. If you're a developer, all the APIs still say Next something or whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's all, it is Next.
20 years later.
Yeah.
It's still.
It's funny. Okay, here's the other one. Sorry, remember I said there were two. Intelligent, and the other one was called Collida.
I don't know.
The Kaleida, it was also a joint venture with Apple and IBM. It was an operating system for PowerPC. Yeah, that was the other one. Sorry, I just finally found it.
It's amazing. I mean, you look at iOS and you know, the next boom, the next major thing, iOS is still in its infancy when you think about it.
It is, but you know, it also benefits from the decades of work that occurred before it on OS X, on Next Step, on what was it, Free BSD, you know, whatever BSD.
Looking forward 20 years, you know what I mean? Like 20 years ago, we're talking 1995, Windows 95 was out. You could see the evolution from Windows 95 to Windows 7. You could see the evolution. Then you had 8 and you have Windows 10, and this looks different, but kind of you could recognize it. 20 years from now, iOS, I can't imagine it being anywhere near what it is now.
Oh. By the way, so, you know, iOS 7, they did kind of a spit shine on the UI, but that's just look and feel, right? We're still running apps full screen. We still have like a grid of icons and a home screen. It's the interactions are basically the same. But I actually think that one of the biggest changes we've ever seen in iOS, we just saw the demonstration of, and it was during the iPhone 6 and 6S portion of the keynote where they were talking about that the 3D touch interface. We basically remember, you know, aside from whatever tactile feedback you get from that or whatever, that the actual UI for what's happening there is really just right clicking, isn't it? It's what
that
we would call like a long press or a long tap today.
Double click or.
Yeah. But what's interesting about it is it's sort of what you're talking about, which is floating windows, not floating application windows, but windows floating above the UI you're in. So in other words, you're doing something in Mail, you're doing something in whatever app. You want to do something else, whatever it might be. Maybe you want to find out what a URL is that, you know. And instead of just context switching away, which by the way, is a huge problem on iOS because there's no hardware back button or central software related back button. Like if you're reading Mail today and there's a URL and you tap on that URL, Safari comes up and you read the web page, and now you want to go back to Mail. How do you do it?
Yeah.
You really have to know what you're doing to get back there. Right. I bet most people hit the home button and then they find, there's the Mail thing and they go back in the Mail. And when you do that, that Mail message will either be up or not be up based on probably how much other stuff is run in the interim. I don't know. It's not a very logical or usable UI. It's just something you get used to. I mean, people who actually know the system know all you have to do is double tap the home screen. You get a list of running apps. You go back to, you know, Mail. It's not that hard, but it's not that hard assuming you know the UI. But these, what do they call them, peak and pop or whatever, you know, is also something you have to learn to do. It's not like we can't claim that this is intuitive. It's just something you have to kind of learn, but you kind of press and hold on it and you get that apparently some kind of tactile feedback. I've not experienced it. And then a little window pops up on top of it. And this is what you're talking about. We're not going to recognize iOS. Aside from the how weird looking iOS 7 would look to someone who had the first iPhone, honestly, I think this is the single biggest change to
the way that iOS. You're interacting with the touch.
Yes. I think this is the one where they'd be like, whoa, like this is actually quite different. You know?
Yeah. I mean, do you, the future of the trackpad is what's at jeopardy now with, you know, multiple touches on a screen.
Yeah.
It kind of takes away, you know, what you could do on a track. I mean, for a while it's been happening, but the fact that you could do a long touch and a soft touch and things like that, that's really making the trackpad not necessary. Not as useful, not necessary for a lot of people.
Okay, but here's the thing. And I, by the way, the one thing that's been happening a lot this week, which I have also engaged in from a kind of a humor standpoint, but I'd like to sort of set the record clear about this stuff this week. With a lot of these announcements, people are pointing to things that Steve Jobs said in particular, or that Apple in general might have said a few years ago, where they're pointing out how they're being hypocritical or whatever. But, you know, if you've done a stylus, you're doing it wrong. Oh, look, now they have a stylus. Oh, they're such jerks, you know. guys, things change. I mean,
yeah, but he the whole stylist thing. Change. The stylist thing. It's funny. I mean, it's funny to bring it up, but when they were talking about you don't need a stylist, it's to actually use a stylist to tap on things. Yep. They're using a stylist to show. You know, if you're okay. an artsy type,
I just want to say, you know, things. Change.
Things change. I mean, Bill Gates said you don't need more than how much RAM?
No, he didn't.
Whatever. Whatever people think he said. You know what I mean? Right. But
yes, things change.
Even if he things did, change. Things change. It's not necessary.
But here's what doesn't change. You could on a desktop computer or a laptop have touch, and you could touch that screen, and you could. I just saw Brad Anderson wrote on Twitter that HP is the world's number one PC maker, which they're not. You could touch the screen, and that's fine. And I'll do that sometimes. Like I talk about this HP thing I use. You're reading a story on the web, and you kind of scroll through with your finger. It's fine. But here's the thing. Those computers do have a mouse or a pointing device of some kind. And actually, if you're using that thing a lot to interact with stuff on the screen, you're going to be using that thing and not touch because – the one thing Apple was right about and that Steve Jobs did say explicitly was that holding your hand out to kind of touch the screen, I'll try to emulate the camera, is tiring. Like holding your arm out in front of your body like this and then moving your hand around and doing stuff, over time, that gets really tiring. It gets tiring up here in your shoulder. It gets tiring in your elbow. It's your whole arm gets really tired. It doesn't work. And the iPad Pro does not solve this problem.
Especially when you dock it.
That's what I mean.
You know, so, when you connect it to the keypad.
It's a little bit of a problem. So, I think a lot of people have said that touchscreens don't make sense. And by the way, that's why Apple hasn't put a touchscreen on a Mac, supposedly, right? A lot of people who don't use touchscreens on PCs say that that's why it's unnecessary and why they would never use it. I think what people don't understand is that you will use it.
Yeah, and but we're bridging that gap, though, Paul. Now that the iPad is you know, you're...
On a PC, you have a choice of everything. And so what happens is you use everything. The problem with the iPad Pro is you don't have a choice of everything. You have a keyboard, which will work for some things. And you have touch, which works for everything, but can be very tiring if you're using that thing in sort of a productivity situation with the keyboard. The pen doesn't solve this problem. The pen is interesting for creative people, but it doesn't really solve the central problem I'm talking about. And so Apple in this case was right. Holding your hand out and touching a screen is very tiring. And that's true. If that's your only option and that's the only way you can select things on screen and right click things and whatever, that can be tiring. I'm not saying that's the problem with the iPad Pro, but it is a problem, you know?
Yeah.
And because people are like, oh, what are you going to do? Put like a mouse on it and, you know, have it be like a PC or whatever. And well, yeah, I mean, actually, yeah, yep, I am. I would.
So yeah. What did you make of the iPhone announcement? I thought it was probably their most lacklustered out of all of them. It was virtually nothing that was announced.
So I guess here's what I'd say. So yes, I mean, evolutionary update. In the past, I might have dumped on Apple with iPhone in particular for that because in the past, I felt like the iPhone needed stuff on whatever version you're talking about where they could have done more. I have to say this time, I don't feel as bad about it because the iPhone 6th generation of phones is fantastic. They're great devices. I mean, how do you improve that in ways that make any more sense? It already has the best fingerprint reader. Most phones don't even have fingerprint readers. It already has one of the best cameras.
But Paul, look at this one right there.
I know.
Look at that one.
I know. I actually kind of like the rose gold one.
Rosé. I think the biggest announcement from this was their upgrade program now.
Right. I agree totally.
Right.
So actually, I was going to say, so the two big updates that they made, Force Touch or 3D Touch, honestly, I feel like you could have done, I know you could have done that without adding that extra hardware into the device. They chose to do it this way. They're unique, whatever. I'm sure it's going to be great. A better camera. I will never complain about a better camera. Good for them. Fantastic. I think it's this other thing. The ability to have a single phone that works on every single carrier. Sell it unlocked. Sell it to you directly where you can pay them every month and get a new iPhone every single year.
I mean, they
in some ways, that's the biggest deal.
Yeah, in a way, this was... I mean, I know we've spoken about unsubsidized phones. This is kind of the other side of it where, you know, you pay them monthly and you get a new phone every year.
Yeah. But so by the way, do you know what the hidden downside to this plan is?
That you got to give your phone back.
No. I don't think most people care about that. They want to get rid of their phone anyway. In fact, the worst thing about owning an iPhone for some people is that every year they have to figure out how to sell it, get the best price for it, and do it in such a way that they don't lose the use of their phone while they wait for the new phone to appear.
Yeah. Right? But
it's a tough thing.
Okay, so what happens if you're like 90% of the iPhone users and you have a cracked screen?
Oh, that's covered under this plan.
Is that covered? So okay, fine.
You get two screen fixes a year per device.
Okay.
That's because you're paying for AppleCare Plus.
Okay.
But here's the thing. So what's the worst part of the deal? That price that you're paying every month for the iPhone, which is, you know, whatever, $32 to $48 roughly, I think it was. I don't believe that that's horribly unreasonable compared to what you might pay, you know, to the carrier, whatever, especially when you factor in the AppleCare. The problem is that's a two-year plan.
Yeah, so for 2 years, you're
tied. So you're spreading the cost of the phone over 2 years. And so let's say it's year one and you pay, I would get the midline 6S Plus. It's $41 a month, 64 gigs of storage.
$41
a month. So for 1 year, I pay $41 per month for this brand new phone, which I love, and I use it every day, and it's really great. And it's so awesome that after 1 year, I want to buy an iPhone 7 Plus, right? Or what? It doesn't matter. Actually, maybe it does matter, I should say. It probably does matter. But let's just say I'm going to move along to the same phone, same type of phone, so iPhone 7 version. And I do. And Apple says, great, go nuts. That's what this is for. Please enjoy the phone. I think you've really benefited there from whatever $41 times 12 is. You paid that much in a year. You can kind of figure it out. Whatever.
You pay $400 and something.
Great. But now it's 2 years later and now you're like, well, I think I want to get a different phone. I'm going to stay with iPhone.
Okay.
But I want to get an iPhone 7S, not an S, 7S Plus.
Okay.
And that phone is less every month.
Uh-huh.
Now what do you do? You would have to pay them the difference then because you're on a two-year plan. You're not on a one-year plan. You're on a two-year plan. This ability to upgrade every year is based on you paying
amount every year.
Yeah.
Okay. So
obviously, if you upgrade to a more expensive phone, you're all set because you'll just pay more now. And,
or if you upgrade to the same one, if you stay with the same plan.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, but here's the worst case scenario. It's next year. It's 2 years from now, whatever it is. And you say, you know what? I like the iPhone, but Samsung or, you know, HTC, somebody, Moto, did something that like, wow, I really want to switch phones now. Now you owe Apple the 12 times 41 or you can't leave.
But that would make sense for anything, right?
No, I know. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that they're doing something wrong. What I'm saying is I don't think most people know that this is happening.
Okay, so
so
people in the chat room are saying they don't know if that is correct. You decide after 1 year, you just give back the phone and you just start a new plan.
But what if you give back the phone and you don't want to start a new plan?
If you don't want to, after 1 year?
Yeah.
Oh, then you got to pay the difference.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Or you buy the so, okay, so how about
well,
this? How about this? Okay. So
after 2 years,
does that phone belong to you?
No, you're leasing the phone. You never own the phone.
You never own.
No.
But why would you? Okay, so here's the thing that sucks.
Yes.
Right now, with my plan, with my phone,
I mean, you could buy. I'm sure you could buy it. It's like a lease. Like,
no, but I think
I'm sure at the end of
a year,
Apple would say, "Give us $550 and it's yours."
Okay, so the cost of the phone is spread amongst 2 years. So after the 24th month, so let's say I don't opt in to get a new one, right?
I really do think the point of this is you get a new one every year.
The point is to get a new one. Absolutely. And most people, that's what they're going to do. Let's say I don't. The phone belongs to me.
After 2 years. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because you paid for it. You're saying you've paid the amount.
Yeah.
You paid off the phone. Because the cost of the phone, in other words, let's bring up a calculator. $41 times 24 is $984, which is more than the acquisition cost of the phone, because that phone would cost $850.
Yeah, so you're paying $100 more.
The difference in price, well, you're paying for AppleCare.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's say AppleCare is probably $100.
Yeah, so yeah, there you go.
That's the price. Yeah, okay. So you're right. So it's not exactly a lease because you are, in fact, paying, you're buying it. But I think that's the point. Like, in other words, so I guess maybe I should say it's an open question. If you go if you do this for 1 year and then you say, I don't want to continue.
I don't want to continue.
Do you have to pay it off?
Yes. Yeah, because it's the same as having a contract.
But what if
for the
you just
phone?
Want to give back the phone? What if you say, you know what?
From what I know with the carriers, right? Because they have the same plan, pretty much. Like with mine, you don't pay up front anymore, and there's no the subsidized cost is in the phone. So you're paying, let's say, $28 a month for this phone for 2 years. If I turn around and say I don't want this anymore, that I still owe the remainder. So let's say I go to Verizon, I'm like, I don't want this. I want another one.
Yep.
I still owe the money on this phone.
So I guess I want to be clear. I think the iPhone upgrade program is awesome. It's
better than what you're getting with the carrier, sure.
And I think the reason is, and this is one of those things we almost have to talk through because it's kind of, you know, it's new. So it's trying to figure this thing out. I think of it as a lease, but actually you are buying the phone. The primary benefit, the primary benefit is that after 1 year you can get a new phone. Now, when you do that, you extend the payments out.
Another 2 years.
2 years.
And another 2 years and another 2 years and another 2 years. Yeah.
Because you're still paying for it.
Yeah.
Okay. I still think it's a good.
It's the same people that lease, right? If you plan on getting something new every couple of years, then this is the plan for you. But you're still doing that. I think this is better than going to the carrier because with the carrier, that $41 is, you're still paying that $41, but you can't opt in every year.
So there's a little complexity here because you're paying two different parties now for something you used to have a single bill for. But I also think it gives you a little more transparency into what you're getting charged from the wireless carrier and the ability to go to a carrier and say, I already have a phone. I just want your service. Is so awesome. I think people who are stuck in the middle of a two-year cycle are going to be in a kind of a weird gray area. But when you can go to your carrier and say, I just want to pay for this a la carte, you're like ad hoc, you know, in other words, I'm not getting a two-year plan. I'm just going to go month to month. You can switch when something awesome happens on T-Mobile or Verizon even or whatever. You can take the thing internationally and use it on any carrier when you travel. I got a Moto X this week, you know, and so this thing's unlocked. It's carrier agnostic. I put my AT&T SIM in it and LTE instantly. It's just online, ready to go. Excellent. And that's how this will be. It's awesome.
I mean, the other advantage is that, Curtis B was saying essentially the same thing, that it's unlocked so you could switch carriers. You're not really tied down to anybody. You're just paying for the phone.
One thing I got to check is a year ago, when I bought, I wonder how I'd find this out.
Okay, so how about this? What if I don't want a carrier? I just want an iPhone. Do I have to get a carrier?
No.
What if I just want to pay the $40 a month?
You just buy Apple. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah,
that's yours.
It's yours.
You do whatever you want.
I mean, that's great because I would, you know, maybe I want to get an iPhone and I don't want to sign up for a carrier. I just want to use it at home.
What did we say the cost was for? Per month.
For 41. $41.
It was 40. Okay, right. $41. So what I'm gonna this will be a stupid thing to do now, but what I'd like to do and what I should do is go back because when I bought my iPhone 6 Plus, yes, a year ago, I actually was paying month to month for it as part of that next thing.
Okay.
And sometime early this year, I paid it off, and it was a horrific sum of money because that phone was $850, and I still owed $600 and something.
Jeez.
Yes. But see, what I'd like to do is go back. I don't remember what the payments were, right? So what I'd like to do is find a bill from January or something.
Oh, see what the payments were, yeah.
And see how it compares. In other words, we know it's $41 from Apple. Like, what was the? I can't do this. Okay,
I think it was like 30. Which iPhone was that?
6 Plus.
I'll tell you what Verizon charges. Verizon got a new logo. Look at that stupid check mark.
Yeah.
Smartphone.
Here, I can find it. Okay, I can find this. This will only take a minute because it's an AT&T.
The
bill
iPhone.
Those
the
things,
iPhone
those
6
are never confusing.
The iPhone 6 is $22 a month on Verizon.
Yeah, but which one?
That's a good question. Okay.
Like I know exactly the one I got, so this I can actually.
Let's go to 64 gig is $27.
Yeah, here it is. Oh no, that's not it.
So let's see the 6S. Maybe they don't. I can't.
Oh,
see
by the way,
6S.
Here it is. $42.50.
42. Okay, so it's the same.
It is exactly. It's actually a little bit more.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah, and I hated having that thing on my bill, you know, because it was, you know.
So on Verizon, if we were going with Verizon for a 64 gig, 6 plus, it's $31.
Which one, though?
64 gig, 6 plus.
64 gig.
Yeah.
Was how much?
31 on Verizon. Yeah,
then you have to be on Verizon.
Yeah. But by the way,
that price you're looking at, you're just looking on their website?
Yeah.
That's... doesn't include taxes.
Yeah, no.
You know, whatever. So it might actually be a little bit closer.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's a new way to look at plans, really. If you like a new phone, which most people do, if you want something new, this is definitely the way to go. I will be shocked that we don't see this from other phone manufacturers. I would be really surprised.
Yeah, totally.
You know, Google could do this with their Google phones. Paul, it is time to wrap it up. If you're watching, guys, if you're watching live, stay tuned. We're going to continue the show on our Patreon show. I have a couple topics I want to talk about. If you are listening to the podcast, guys, you could subscribe. You could sign up for the Patreon shows by being a funder. You could fund us. Patreon.com/whatthetech is a website. You can fund us anything you want, and you get access to a whole slew of shows. That Paul and I have recorded over the last, I don't know, year.
A slew. Like a slurry of shows.
Yeah, like a slurry. Like a slurry of shows. You just go to patreon.com/whatthetech. Also, if you want to help the GFK network out, you can subscribe. Yeah, you can subscribe to us. We're everywhere podcasts are available. Also, use our Amazon link, gfq.co/Amazon. Bookmark it. Whenever you buy something, we get a tiny little credit. That's gfq.co/Amazon. You can follow Paul at The Rot on Twitter. TheRot.com is a website. A lot of good stuff happening on there. And also, you can follow me at Andrew Zarian. That's it, guys. Stay tuned if you're staying live. If not, go download our Patreon show. Promise it'll be okay. It won't be great. It'll be okay. See you later.
It won't be great.